Hello, this is Aaron Wren. Thank you for joining the show today. And I'm delighted to be joined by special guest Christine Emba, who is a columnist and editor at The Washington Post. And she is the author of the recent essay, Men Are Lost, Here's a Map Out of the Wilderness. There's a link to that in the show notes. You'll definitely want to check it out. So thank you very much for joining, Christine.
Thank you so much for having me.
Last November, she reached out to me about this column she wanted to write about men's issues. We had a great conversation. And then I was looking for it, and I didn't see anything. And I'm like, well, maybe she decided she didn't want to write it after all, decided to go a different direction. And then the last month, out came this, not a column, not a 750-word op-ed, but a 7,500-word essay in the Washington Post. Think of it more like an Atlantic cover story type article, again, called Men Are Lost. It went viral. It was sort of the talk of the town, I think, for several days. I looked it up. There were over 10,000 comments left on the article. Well, that will tell you something. And again, there's a link to that in the show notes. And please do check it out. And I thought it was a great article. So congratulations on getting a big hit there.
Thank you so much. And thank you for talking to me way long ago. It definitely took longer to come to fruition than I thought it was going to.
Yeah, it was a lot of work. It's a lot of work to put out something good that's long. People don't realize that. How are men lost?
Wow, big question. I mean, first of all, I should state that, you know, and I state this in the article, that there's the idea of a crisis of masculinity, of worrying about manhood, has been a sort of American tradition. Like every 50 years, some commentators, since the founding really, commentators are like, oh no, what's happening to American men? But this moment, I think, is distinct in that men do seem to be lost and there is data to back it up. Hmm. So when I say men are lost, I think that men are currently kind of unsure of their place in the world, of what it means to be a man and what men should do, and are looking for direction. And you can see also that men are kind of falling behind, not kind of, but they are falling behind, and the stats back this up. So, you know, we have the idea of deaths of despair, which are rising in the United States, very unusual for a developed country. But 3 out of 4 deaths of despair are men, and deaths of despair include suicides, drug overdoses, and alcohol-related deaths, so drinking yourself to death, basically. When you look at education, for every 100 bachelor's degrees awarded to women, only 74 are awarded to men, and that number is, you know, continuing to fall. When you looked at the college dropout and like lack of enrollment numbers during the COVID-19 pandemic, there was a big drop in college enrollment, but 70% of those who left school were young men. And then you can look at statistics about wages and earnings. Wages for men have stagnated basically since the 1970s. And the men kind of most likely to drop out of the job market or remain sort of under unemployed are actually young men. Men in sort of prime working age from 25 to 34. And then, of course, you can think about the reasons for this. Part of it is that, you know, there's just competition from women who, since the sexual revolution and, you know, the feminist movement, have entered the workforce in droves and are doing very well, doing well for themselves and are succeeding in an economic sense, and also have the resources to kind of do without men. You know, it's more likely and certainly possible that women can start families by themselves with enough resources and artificial reproductive technology. You know, after the Me Too movement, I think there's been sort of a backlash and a drop in partnership too for men. Men are more likely to be single than women, are more likely to not be having sex than women, are more likely to live alone or with their parents than women are. And then when you talk to young men, I mean, those are the statistics, but when you talk to young men, I feel like, as I said in the piece, young men, many of them are getting a little bit weird. There's a sense of malaise. They talk about being lonely, of not having close friendships, of not sort of being sure who to be or how to be. And you see a lot of growing interest in the category of people I describe as manfluencers, sort of Jordan Peterson, Andrew Tate, Tucker Carlson to some extent, Bronze Age pervert, guys who are just telling men how to man up, whether in good ways or bad. So you see that men are also looking for direction in this moment.
Yeah, I've really noticed there's a tremendous split between the online influencers you mentioned and sort of traditional leaders and authority figures. You know, there's been a lot of hand-wringing for many years, for example, about why men don't go to church and that, you know, religious participation has been a much more female characteristic, female things. Men have seemed to be detached from, any parental authorities, traditional sort of public authorities like Josh Hawley. I don't think, you know, he's wrote this book on manhood, but Josh Hawley is not doesn't have a huge following, right, among young men. But yet all of these online influencers, I mean, a lot of them just have gigantic audiences. And I saw this starting about a year ago, or between me, about a decade ago. But today it's amazing how many of these people are. And some of them I think are really helpful. Like Jocko Willink, the former Navy SEAL, he tells you to get up for 4:30 in the morning and go work out, something that I personally don't do, but that's pretty good. And then you get over the way, all the way to Andrew Tate, who's been seen by something like 80% of teenage British boys was the thing. And it really is a phenomenon. You ask friends of mine who have high school age boys, ask them, do you heard of Andrew Tate? Like, oh yeah, everybody watches Andrew Tate. What are these online influencers doing or saying that makes them such a draw when kind of the traditional authorities aren't? Because it does seem men are looking for guides, but they're not finding it in the traditional institutions and authorities.
Sure. I talk in my piece about what I see as a problem, the fact that men are looking for direction, are looking for someone, a sort of older mentor figure to tell them who to be. And the mainstream seems really unwilling to provide that. Instead of saying like, oh, okay, here's, you want direction on how to be a man, here's some examples, here's how you be a man. The mainstream often seems unwilling first to acknowledge that masculinity or manhood is like a specific thing at all. Instead of saying, here's how to be a man, it's, oh, just be a good person, which is not particularly specific. Or in fact says that masculinity, as you conceive of it, as the average person conceives of it, is toxic. And so you shouldn't be that at all. In contrast, these manfluencers, who I would say are often, almost always kind of coded as slightly to very right wing. First, they're willing to say that, you know, yes, masculinity is a thing, manhood is a thing, and it's actually a good thing. So they provide a positive vision, an aspirational understanding of what it means to be a man. And then they're just very clear about what you should do. So you mentioned that Jocko Willink gives like this really specific advice, wake up at 4:30 and work out. But even Jordan Peterson, you know, I think one of kind of the first notable manfluencers that I ran into, he had literally 12 rules for life, like a very clear map. This is what you do. This is how you do it. And then you'll achieve something at the end. So that makes, that's very attractive. It's a very legible map. But then also, finally, I think they provide empathy. So instead of saying like, oh, men, you're toxic and you need to stop complaining and pull yourself up by your emotional bootstraps, they say like, oh yes, I see you, young man. Like I see your struggles. I empathize with what you're going through and I want to help you. And you know, that help can be good or bad, but they're acknowledging sort of this connection there, acknowledging the problem and making people feel really seen. And I think that's really attractive.
Yeah, you mentioned the American Psychological Association report that they did on masculinity that basically just defined every traditional masculine trait as toxic, says it needs to be deconstructed. It's certainly easy to understand why when institutions like that define masculinity in exclusively negative terms, young men look at that and say, I don't want any part of that. Even if they wouldn't ordinarily be attracted to, you know, Bronze Age pervert or something like that, they're like, well, this is the alternative. I don't want that. Maybe I'll find someone else that sort of takes it seriously. And I think you have a great insight there that these people care about men. They don't just deliver man-up lectures. They might challenge you to get up at 4:30 in the morning, but they don't give you this lecture that's just all about you need to step up and work hard and get married and sacrifice and serve your wife. And that's the whole kind of conservative shtick on manhood. It's all about essentially self-denial. And it's really has nothing to do with the men themselves. It doesn't give them anything that they want. And the thing I loved about Peterson's, some of his rules, is that they really work at kind of two levels. When he says, clean your room, bucko, it's kind of a metaphor. But if you're like one of these lost boys, you could literally start, well, I'm just going to physically clean my room. It works at sort of a naive level as well as sort of a metaphorical level. And it is impressive. I do find it interesting that Peterson and some of these people actually do have some female followers. They're not entirely male dominated, but certainly heavily. You quote Richard Reeves in the book. He wrote in the piece, he wrote a book called Of Boys and Men, also got a lot of press. He's a former Brookings Institution scholar who's now founded his own institute on boys and men. And you ask him, okay, Richard, what is a positive? You document all these issues, some of which you talked about. There is no positive vision of masculinity in society. And you ask him, what should one be? He's like, that's a good question. I haven't really thought about that. You know, he's like, I don't really have a good answer yet. And I think that's something he's working on. Do you have a suggestion for sort of the mainstream on how they should think about an aspirational vision of manhood that would be more appealing to many of these young men who might turn into an Andrew Tate? I mean, some people you're not going to reach if they really, you know, if you want to be a pickup artist, I know there's a good alternative to that. But if you're just looking for a way to like be healthy, get in shape, be better in your career, I would think there could be some better things that society could offer. Do you have any ideas on those?
Yeah, no, that's a really important point. I think one thing that's actually interesting and complex about what Reeves said in the piece, and I talk about this sort of phenomenon in the piece too, is that I think he actually has something of an answer, but in that moment, wasn't sure he should say it. Mm-hmm. And I think that is one of the things that's happening in this moment. People are unwilling to be prescriptive in their ideas. And there are a couple of reasons for this. So first of all, I think especially in the mainstream, there is a fear of this kind of zero-sum thinking, right? So, you know, the feminist movement happened, which I think was a good thing, actually. Mm-hmm. Women are now able to enter the economy, enter the workforce, do things that they hadn't done before. It's great. It's also incomplete. You know, women are still coming up from behind in some sense. And I think that there is a fear in the mainstream that, well, if we turn to talking about men, telling men what they should be doing, you know, giving men our attention, then suddenly we won't have time for women anymore. And that's a bad thing. And there's like this zero sum thinking that we can only pay attention to one group at a time. So let's leave men to their own devices. And then I also think that sort of men's issues have a bit of a branding problem. So often the loudest voices on the kind of let's help men side are in fact a little bit toxic. So you have, you know, like men's rights activists and pickup artists. And yes, Andrew Tate, who talks a lot about masculinity, but does so by denigrating women and in fact is now an accused sex trafficker. Yeah. And is in jail in Romania. So when you start talking very openly about like, oh, here's what men should do, like here's the ideal man, there's a little bit of worry that you'll get a kind of side eye, like, you're one of those guys. Mm-hmm. And so I think mainstream figures feel a little bit nervous talking about, you know, how a man should be for that reason. And then there's just sort of like the modern moment, which really privileges individuality and sort of defining your own path. And I think there is also a fear that's somewhat justified because, you know, when you create boxes or create too strict an ideal, you inevitably leave people out. And that can be used to stigmatize people. That if you define being a man too closely, then yes, then people will be left out and hurt. And some people won't live up to that and they will be outcast in society. So people don't want to strictly define it. That said, I think that we can come up with a positive vision of masculinity that is not a narrow box. You know, not every man has to be John Wayne, right? We can have many models of masculinity that are still distinctively masculine. And I guess how I think about it is, first, you have to actually admit that maleness is something different than femaleness, that the ideal masculinity is going to look different from the ideal femininity. And I say that because I think of, when I think of defining sort of an ideal, I think of virtue, right? And virtue is sort of built in embodiment in a certain sense. If you are male, then presumably you kind of, you inhabit a male form that, you know, is different from the female form. And what does it mean to be virtuous in that form? For instance, I think of an ideal masculinity, thinking of a man, okay, as a man, you're probably stronger than most women, children, and old people. What does it mean to use that strength in a virtuous way? What does it mean to use these masculine qualities well? And, you know, Richard Reeves actually in the piece actually gave a good example of an ideal masculinity that he says he's trying to teach his own sons. He wants to teach his own sons to be, you know, brave enough to ask a girl out to a dance if that's their preference. You know, kind of wise and charismatic and savvy enough to either take her there or accept it when she says no. And, you know, chivalrous enough to make sure she gets home safely either way. Mm-hmm. And I think some of the qualities that that embodies are, first of all, you know, kind of strength and bravery. Like, it does take some courage to ask someone out. It takes initiative, you know, a sort of a do-it-yourself, a sort of activeness. It takes responsibility. So there's a sense of duty that I think is involved in being a good man. And I know, I think it's interesting that you mentioned that, you know, churches and other communities tell men to be servants and to serve, and there's nothing in it for them. But in some sense, I do think that there is an aspect of masculinity, ideally, that is about taking care of and protecting others.
No, I'd agree.
Especially those who are weaker than you. And yeah, a sense of self-mastery and honor.
Yeah, it's interesting you say that, Richard Reeves, to ask a girl out on a date. If you look at the manosphere of people, I mean, that's one of the things that they argue for. By and large, they tell you to stay off online dating apps. So you have to have the courage to actually talk to a woman and ask her out.
In person.
And there is something that's very difficult to do for some reason. And so that is, I think that's like actually a good thing that you should have the confidence to do that. I am reminded of this one YouTube clip. It was some pastor, I can't remember his name, who talked about what he called the man spectrum. And he said the man spectrum extends from Mr. Rogers to Mr. T. He's like, find your place on the spectrum. And I think the point was that there's not one, there isn't just one size fits all model where you have to be some bodybuilder who's into training Brazilian jiu-jitsu and, you know, eating paleo and all of that stuff. So, yeah, I think you can end up with an overly limited and kind of almost cartoonish stereotype sometime.
And I think that's kind of what Andrew Tate actually is in some ways. He's like the 15-year-old's ideal of what a man should be. He's got a lot of cars and hot girls and like is always almost surgically attached to a cigar. And it's kind of a caricature of masculinity, but it's very clear and obvious. And so he is attracted to a lot of 14-year-olds.
I think he somewhat channeled some of the hip hop themes into a sort of a different format where he's like, I got the Bugattis, you know, I got the private jets. This is what you should aspire to have. And he just sort of like repositioned it in sort of a self-help form and like rather than an entertainment form, although there's certainly an aspect of entertainment in what he does. All these guys have to be entertainers. That's one of the problems with social media, in my opinion, is everybody has to be like a clown on stage, kind of like forcing the clicks. But yeah, he's definitely an interesting one. And we'll see what happens to him as his charges develop there. But
The problem with, yes, I do think that everyone has to be an entertainer. That's an interesting way of putting it. And one interesting thing about, you know, what does a good man look like is if you talk to people about what a good man looks like, most people will say, well, a good man is not the one out on stage, like flaunting his good manness, right? And so that's another reason to be sort of questionable about these advice givers. But with Andrew Tate, I think specifically, and with the figures like, you know, Bronze Age Pervert, what is really alarming is that their ideal of masculinity, their ideal of manhood is entirely amoral, and it's not pro-social in any way. It's very selfish. It's all about being in service to yourself, putting the world at your service, taking and not giving back. And if that is the mode of masculinity that men are emulating, you know, we're going to have a real problem.
No, I agree with that. It's like they took the whole servant leader concept that a lot of people have, where it's like you're just you're nothing but essentially an expendable, vehicle to like serve other people, and flipped it to the other extreme. It's like it's all about you. I think Jordan Peterson does a pretty good job of trying to balance that, where he's like, look, you're important to other people. Ergo, you actually have to take very good care of yourself. And if you're not healthy, and if you're not in a good place, and if you're not successful, you're not going to be much use to anyone else. So I think finding a balance where like being, you know, having something, you have to have something to give something. And so accumulating and being successful is good, but it can't just be all about yourself. There does have to be something that is for the benefit of other people as well. And I certainly agree with that completely. I guess my last question is, I notice that all these online men's influencers are actually men. I don't know that there are any female online influencers who are really active in the men's space. I think maybe Candace Owens, I don't listen to her stuff, but maybe she has kind of a men's following, but she's more of a political person, I think, than sort of a men's influencer. It seems like most of the people in kind of mainstream society who are talking about kind of men's issues are actually women. So yes, there's Josh Hawley and Richard Reeves, but this recent Politico magazine special issue on masculinity, every single article in it was written by a woman.
Yeah.
Why is this? Is there something that is going on that sort of men can't speak up for themselves or something like that? Is that part of it?
Well, yeah, I noticed that with the Politico issue, and I was like, interesting. And obviously, my piece was written by a woman. I think there are maybe a couple of reasons for this. One is that I think that men tend to be a bit less likely to sort of, and this is my speculation, sort of therapize themselves or spend a lot of time sort of thinking about like, oh, like, how should I be? Like, what is society telling me to be? Like, spend a lot of time talking about these cultural modes and questions in a way. And women just spend more time doing that. There's this sort of the cliche that's a cliche because it's kind of true, right? That women interact face to face and men interact side by side. And so I think women spend just a lot more time thinking about kind of social roles in this way. I think that, you know, this sort of branding problem that we talked about before comes into play, at least with who is published on masculinity. Because again, like if, you know, a man were to submit a piece that's like, well, actually men are struggling and I'm going to tell you why as a man, pay attention to me. I think there might be some reflexive pushback from gatekeepers being like, men, really? You? So it's in some ways perhaps kind of easier for women to get a place to write about this. But also I think that women are becoming more aware of it and are trying to figure out what's going wrong, because women are interacting with men. Women have sons, they have brothers, they have friends, they have husbands. And also, I think a lot of women, including myself, frankly, are women who are dating or have dated, are trying to find partners and are looking around and sort of realizing there's no one they want to be with. And what's the problem here? And so I think that then drives them to want to figure it out, want to talk about this problem.
Yeah, it's a quip attributed to Henry Kissinger. I don't know if he really said it, that no one will ever win the battle of the sexes because there's too much fraternizing with the enemy. But it would be interesting to know what he thinks today, because it does seem that it's possible for both sexes to lose, you know, in a sense, as we see in places like South Korea, where, you know, it's not a healthy environment, and we certainly don't want that here. And so I hope that we're able to get back on track. Well, again, congratulations on having such a great piece and a big hit as well. It's one thing to write a good piece. It's quite another to get people to read it, and you managed to accomplish both. So congratulations, and thanks for joining. Again, Christine Emba is a columnist at The Washington Post, whose piece is called Men Are Lost, Here's a Map Out of the Wilderness. There's a link in the show notes. If you haven't read it, be sure to do so. Again, there's 10,000 comments if you want to check those out too. It was the talk of the town for several days. Thank you very much.
Thank you. And I'll actually just plug something now that I think about it. You did ask, well, you asked about models of masculinity. And one of the fun things about the piece is that there was a call out kind of nested just high in the piece, where I asked people to write in and tell me who their ideal of masculinity was and why. And sometimes callouts can be hit or miss, but in addition to just 10,000 comments on that piece, I got at least like 350 responses to that callout. And many of them were really sort of long, thoughtful, multi-paragraph essays almost. And so there's a follow-up piece that I did collecting sort of those ideal men, some of the people who came up the most often and the tropes that were reflected the most often. And I can send you a link to that piece too. Okay. But it's really fascinating. But it's actually the spectrum you describe from Mr. Rogers to Mr. T. Mr. Rogers came up a lot, surprisingly. But then so did everyone from the man in Cormac McCarthy's The Road to Johnny Cash to LeBron James.
And
I'll be writing more about this subject, and I am soon to be launching a Substack where I will collect more writing on this and also future writing. So christineemba.substack.com.
Well, great. I'll make sure I get links to all those in the show notes, because the reason to go on a podcast is to promote the stuff that you're doing, and I want to make sure we give you the full opportunity to do that. And so definitely check that out. Check these pieces out. Well worthwhile. Thank you again for joining. I really appreciate it.
Thanks so much for having me.